Salut les rebelles intelligents, donc je me trouve actuellement avec Ricardo Teixeira. Hey, what's up man? Donc Ricardo, vous l'avez déjà vu sur cette chaîne puisque il a été double champion du monde de karaté. Je l'avais interviewé sur justement comment il avait réussi à accomplir cet exploit et aussi quelles étaient les passerelles qui étaient possibles de faire entre le fait de devenir champion du monde et le fait de devenir un bon entrepreneur. Mais on n'a pas pu vraiment aller très loin dans sa carrière d'entrepreneur, donc c'est de ça qu'on va parler aujourd'hui. Donc Ricardo, il parle un petit peu français, mais pas suffisamment pour qu'on fasse l'interview. Donc, on va switcher en anglais. So, Ricardo.
Hey.
Hey. So, you were a worldwide champion of karate.
Yes.
A few years ago.
A few years ago.
Like in 1993.
93, really?
Yes. Okay, wow, okay. So, you were very young when you became a worldwide champion.
Yeah, I was 20 years old.
20 years old.
Yeah, and the seniors were at 21, so I was 1 year earlier.
Okay. Yeah. So at 20 years old, so beside karate, what did you do with your life?
So when I was, if I go a little bit, you know, rewind a little bit, I was studying computer science, and I was passionate about computers. So I had, when I was 9 years old, I watched, you probably don't remember, but the people of plus 40 remembers about the Sinclair. It was a computer Sinclair. It was 48K in terms of memory, and I fell in love with that. And then I did all my studies around that because I wanted to do something about that. And so I studied in all my life in Coimbra to the university.
Well, it's a private joke, so yeah, okay. So in this town in Portugal.
Yeah, yeah. And so I studied everything, and I also did some freelance jobs. Like software developer, or even word processor, also in computers. And so when I was like 20, at the same time when I was world champion, I was doing some freelance jobs for some companies, like
to create software.
Yes, yes, okay. Yeah, that was the thing that I was doing.
So you were a freelancer for some companies. So you were already creating like coding for them.
Yeah.
But so that's interesting because you were young and you were working as freelancer for them. How did you manage to get them as customers? Did they?
Oh, it's a good question. So one of the things that I did is first of all, it was not common to have a kid in computers, especially in the place where I was growing. And so, and also in the place, in the neighborhood. And so I was referenced by people about computers. And that is one thing. The other one is I offered myself to do some kind of jobs because I want to have the experience. So that's one of the things that I see most of the times that people... I cannot call a mistake, but it's something that I incentivize people to do, which is work for free, you know?
Oh, so it's just for free?
I worked some of the jobs. I wanted to do it. Some of them, they paid in the end, but I offered myself. I said, okay, I want to work with your company. I really would like to do this. So if you don't pay me, I would like to do it anyway. Because I knew that company...
Motivation.
That company would give me a lot of leverage for my future, for knowledge, because I knew some people that were there working. I wanted to get that knowledge. And also in terms of resume, because they were like a big company. So I wanted to work with them. And most of the people, they don't have patience to work or to get this kind of experience for free.
Right.
Because it's not for free. They are paying for our learning. So, yeah, that's one of the things that I did.
Okay, so you contacted a few of them and you didn't work full-time for them. It was like...
No, because I was studying, yeah.
So, but did you work... Did you have to go, because it was before internet, so did you have to go to their office to work?
Well, yes, but I during the university, I already had an Amstrad, which was...
I use that too a little bit, yeah.
And so I work at home and I would bring the source code.
So you were coding on your Amstrad, but for other machines.
Yes.
So it was possible to do that.
Yeah. It was.
You couldn't test
the
program. Yeah.
No.
It was just text, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would bring in and then test it there, and I would come up.
That's funny. That's exactly what Bill Gates and Paul Allen did for their first software. They coded it without... They couldn't test it.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they brought it to the...
That is amazing what they did.
Because it worked.
That was amazing.
Anyway, so yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah, so I did that because at the same time I was doing, for money, I was doing bodyguard. Also, I was doing bodyguard
really?
Bouncing.
Because
yes.
You were the fucking world champion of karate, so
no,
why not?
Because I needed the money and I had some skills, so so I used that. But anyway, I was doing that not only for the money, but for the knowledge. I was thinking ahead. I was thinking like a few years ahead. Because I wanted to do something. I want to be an entrepreneur in that field.
In software development?
Yes. I don't know if it was software or network, but especially software. Yeah, I was a little bit involved with the coding. So
you start with this, and then what's next?
So what happened was I graduate in 1995, I think. Yeah, I graduate. And I was like... What should I do? Should I open immediately my firm, my company, or should I work for others?
So, which is a question a lot of people ask themselves if they want to be entrepreneurs.
Oh yes. So, oh, yes. Because the thing is, I was used to be in charge because I was a master in my dojo, so I was teaching already 400 people, and so.
You were teaching karate.
Yes, teaching karate.
So, were you making money with that?
Well, yes, I did some money. Yes,
but
yes.
You could live with that if you
wanted to. I could. Yeah. No, I could not scale. Well, today we could scale with the online courses and all that stuff.
Not at the time.
But not at that time.
At that time, you could, but it would require management.
Very hard, yes, and also we had to build like a pyramid with people that would work for me, that would teach, and I would get a percentage. But I never liked that kind of things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I never liked it. So, and for me, it was a question of giving me money, of course. People would give value, because we know if people go for free, they don't give value. And so it was already kind of an entrepreneur. I was being an entrepreneur. I was always trying to look to dojo as, okay, how can I do it in a faster way? How can I do it? Which the experience would be great for the student, not only the martial arts, but also the thing around that. Like, for example, we would send every 3 months information to the parents saying, how are they? What could they improve? We would ask for the school. So it was...
So you went all the way, way farther than most karate
schools. Yeah, we were totally different. And we would do like, for example, every time there is an event, imagine that Saturday and Sunday during the weekend we had an event. We would do a press release before, during, and after. Mm-hmm. So that would help us to get in the press and at the same time get more clients, more students. Mm-hmm. And so so that was a way to look to the entrepreneurship also, definitely. And and suddenly when I was graduate, my mother sent an application with my resume to
your CV.
A CV, yeah. To the I don't know if it's not government, but it's not private. It's where they have the stats.
Okay.
It's
like the Office of Statistics of Portugal.
Yes.
Which is not, it doesn't sound like the most exciting job ever.
No, but it was a software developer.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it was a software developer. So it was interest. I cannot say that it was not interest. It was interest. But the funny part was...
Your dojo, it was your company?
Oh, legally, it was not a company.
Oh.
It was myself.
But so you were already selling yourself. And you were already an entrepreneur.
Of course.
When you graduated.
Yeah,
because
I had two schools. At the same time, I was selling also, you know, the kimonos, the belts, the gloves. I was selling that also inside the dojo. So I was already an entrepreneur in my dojo. So I was feeling that side. So to go and work to a person, it would be like... total different game.
Right.
So I'm not. I was not.
So your mother sent a CV to mostly the government. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Because she thought, oh, it's a perfect job. It's secure and everything. You know, you all have parents, and so she sent that. So I was like, I don't know if I'm going. But suddenly I saw that there were 400 people applying for that. So I said, okay.
Oh, four. But and they selected you.
Well, yes, but what applied to me was, okay, 400 people.
Just competition.
Yes. So I was like, okay, let's see how I go, you know. So I went through the phases. It was like 2 days, complete like 8 hours. I've never done something like that. So it was a good experience at the same time. So I went for 8 hours, and they select like three people. I was one of the three, and then they got an interview, a live interview with the, you know, all the bosses and everything, and then they select me. But after 10 months, I quit. Because I was working from 9 to 5 there, but I would stay from 5 to 7, 8 there. Because I was like, okay, I don't want to go home. I want to do this.
Wow.
And so also people start to complain a little bit. They were like, oh, I don't...
He's working too much.
He's working too much. Yeah,
that's a common complaint in this kind of organization.
Yes.
Don't want to stand out too much.
Yeah, so... Yeah. So I start, but anyway, so I built my company in the middle of this. And it's one of the things that sometimes I say to people, okay, if you want to have a company and you have your job, okay, just keep your job until you feel secure and work after job. So that's what I start to do after the job, because I saw it was hard and I was getting enemies. So what I start to do is from 5 to 10, 11, I start to build my company. I start to, you know, the papers, the start to understand. I didn't know nothing about hardware, you know, how to build a computer. So I started to build computers. I started to understand a little bit more.
Why? Because your goal was to build a software company, right?
Yeah, well, my goal was to have a technology company. I was not sure if it was a software, because I knew that hardware and software, I needed to understand. Even though I could make some money, but in my mind, I thought, okay, the money is in the software business. But I need to understand the machine. Mm. So I need to understand how this works.
For the record, what language did you learn at school?
At school? Oh, it was, the first was Pascal.
Okay.
It was Pascal, which was cool. We also had a little bit basic.
Because base is the base.
It's not good. It's not good because it has a lot of defects. Pascal was really good. And then we start to learn C. And in the university, we had a lot of language.
Okay.
So because the idea in the university was to understand how the language works and not going deep in one language.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So you begin to study like on your part time after work, how to create your company. And
After 10 months, I just, I had like 2-3 clients that I was gathering through my friends. And so
they were asking you to create software for them.
In that time, it was more like, oh, I want to do this computer. It was selling hardware because it was easier.
I started like that too, yeah.
Yeah, it was easier. It was easier. Because developing software, it takes more time. So
Yeah, right.
So that was the easiest part. So so after 10 months, I was like, okay, I need to do this like full time. So I quit. They were a little bit surprised because I was like, they were expecting me to go another year. And so I quit. Of course, my parents were like, but it was a good call. It was a good call.
Because?
Well, because I was not happy. I was not happy there. And I was feeling that even though the life of entrepreneur has a lot of ups and downs, I usually say that we are gladiators. Because we go to the field, we don't know if we are going to kill or be killed, you know. But in the end of the day, we control our faith, our destiny. And I was not feeling that when I was working there. I was just, you know. And I think it is possible to work with some money and feeling happy. But I was like in the cage. Too many rules, too many things that I could not do. Even if I would improve.
Yeah, yeah. So this was not an environment for an entrepreneur.
Oh, no.
So when you decided to quit, were you making money with your...
A little bit. Not sufficient enough.
Okay, so you were not...
Yeah, on the risk.
But did you still have your dojo? Because I don't...
Oh, yes,
but
yes,
I have. How could you still have your dojo and your job and build your business?
Well, one of the things that I learned through times is time management.
Okay.
So I learned how to prioritize and also the... Some of the principles that we start to know the name that I didn't know that time, you know, like Parkinson law or Pareto law, all that stuff.
So you learn how to be more productive.
Yes, yes. So, and that was something that I always had in my life. I always had a lot of things at the same time. I remember when I was a Boy Scout, which was amazing to be also an entrepreneur. Okay, I advise you
Yeah, if you have kids. We were chatting about that today.
Oh yes.
Were like, maybe being a Scot is like the best training to be an entrepreneur, because they teach you how to be autonomous, to do stuff that most people would think it's crazy, but for us it's normal.
Yeah, I totally agree. Being a Boy Scout, I was like almost like 15 years, and so I learned a lot in there. So what was the question?
So how did you have the time to do anything?
Oh yeah, the time.
You
know? Yeah. So like I was saying, when I was in school during high school and even university, I had always a lot of friends in different, because I never had my own group of friends. I had several groups. Mm-hmm. So because my idea was to meet a lot of people at the same time. So that was another thing that I started to do. Is with Boy Scouts, I start to meet a lot of people from the different points in the country, and some international. With karate, I start to meet a lot of people from other countries, because I was doing international competitions. And so I start to see that it was important to have these connections. And I usually say that connection is the fifth principle to be unstoppable. That's a thing that I teach in one of my courses. And so I start to realize that, okay, I need to meet all of these people. So I start to develop also my network in the universe, because I knew that in the end would pay off. And so, like I said, I start to learn a lot about time management, to deal with this time and to deal with what was the priority for me. It was a really good school. Yeah.
Okay, so you decide to quit.
Yes.
And you still don't make sufficient money to live. So what do you do?
So one of the things that I did is, the pressure with money is, it's a good pressure. It's a good pressure, because it makes us, you know, it's like a kick in the butt.
But you were not in a position of danger, because you were still living with
your
parents,
exactly.
Right?
I was going to say
it's also important to say that.
Yeah, it is.
Because
it
that's
is.
Also a myth that a lot of people think that entrepreneurs are a bit kamikaze.
Yeah.
They take huge risk. But usually it's not true at all.
It's true.
They take like calculated risk, and they have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, a plan Z. If something is like goes wrong.
Yeah.
So you knew that worst case, you would be with your parents, so you didn't have to pay the rent and stuff like that. So you knew you wouldn't be on the street, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But at that time, so when I set my company, like almost like two, I think it was only the first or the second year, my parents had a cafe that they sold the cafe. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit risk, you know, because there was no income for my parents. Mm. I have my income, and so there was a little bit risk in the beginning, and in a certain point a big risk, but we'll get there. So you were asking about the beginning was record me.
Yeah, but I mean, we were talking about the risk and also the, so you got the pressure, you had the pressure to make money. So what did you do?
So one of the things that I realized is I needed some money to survive so I can build my software. And so more or less at the same time, my first one, had a legal issue. He had a divorce. Hmm. And so I helped on that. And so I spend a lot of time with lawyers. So I start to realize that they needed help for management, because they knew the technical part, the legal stuff, but the management, the billing, the client manager, the marketing, all that stuff, they don't know shit, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I start to see that it was interesting to develop something there, but as a single guy, developing software and writing the code and survive at the same time would be hard. So I did a little bit like a contract with my first master, and he supplied me some money to survive, at least, okay, for a certain period. That would help to, because I was trying to also get some help, because I knew that to develop software alone, it would take me forever.
Yeah.
And so I would have some help. And with that money, I could hire two people, and they would help me on the software. So that's how I started also. So I usually say that I started from negative, because I start owing someone.
But so were you master paid you this money?
So I didn't get it.
Why your master paid you these?
It just helped me.
Okay, just to help.
Yeah, just to
so
help.
So your goal
at
was
least they didn't give me like a lot of money. No, you give me like a sufficient every month.
Your goal was to write a software for attorneys already.
Yeah.
But did you already have someone who was interested?
Yes, because the lawyers that were working with my master. They didn't have anything.
So you told them.
So I proposed them.
Okay, and they said yes, but we need to see the software first before.
No, no. Well, what I proposed was, okay, could you be my client pilot? You know, my beta testing client, and in returning, I will offer you the software and the maintenance and everything for forever. So today, they are our main. Well, they are also our lawyers, but they
really?
Are main tester. And
20
are,
years after.
Yes. Yeah, 21 years after.
So they still not pay? Don't pay?
No.
Wow. But okay, but you can ask them 1 billion questions if you want to.
Yeah.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
You ask them, what about these features? What do you think? Blah, blah.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And they were amazing.
That's it's a long partnership. So
yes.
It seems that it started like that. Okay, so you begin to recruit people?
Well, so I recruit two people.
But how? You didn't have the money.
I didn't have the money. So what I did is a percentage. I said, okay, if we could sell this, you could get some percentage. And they were like, I think two of them, they were still students. So they were working a little bit with me and at the same time.
So it was like part-time.
Yeah, and I would give them like a very small money that I would, you know, very short money only to help their expenses in terms of the university. And so that's how I start to build the software. Yeah.
Awesome. And?
And so this was...
So what year was that?
1996.
Okay.
Yeah, 1996, so 1997.
Internet was beginning to rise, but it was still...
Yeah. And to be honest, it took us almost like 2 years to have a first version of the software.
Oh, but what did you do for 2 years?
Yeah, because we were developing the stuff, and we started to develop in a language called FoxPro. Mm-hmm. FoxPro was a kind of database that Microsoft had for a long time. It was like a little bit competition with Access. I don't know if you know, but anyway. And so we were developing that, but then we faced a lot of challenge, and the technology started to change, and we realized that we had to change also that.
So you had to develop again from scratch?
Oh, yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I'm sure it was like excruciating for you to make this decision.
It was. It was like, oh, we have to throw up everything to the garbage. But at the same time,
wait, after how many months did you realize that?
Oh, probably 1 year, probably.
Wow, so 1 year of work, you had to trash
probably,
it.
Yes, but we put that software in our partners, you know, our clients' partners.
Oh, so you could give you feedback.
Yeah, for sure, yes. So it was not, I cannot say, oh, it was totally throw up. No, we learned a lot. But we, in the terms of technology point, we had to develop again. So we started to develop that. And on 1999, we had like the 1.0 version for what we call in production, which means to the market. And we started to sell on that, more or less, 1999. And in 2000, in Portugal, Microsoft used to do a kind of the Oscars of software. Mm-hmm. They would do like a kind of, you know, even like a gala, you know. It was very, very, very cool for the geeks.
but you were invited?
And we applied to this competition.
Okay.
We applied. And we won.
Awesome.
So it was really cool that we won. At the same time, it was a cool year. This was 2000. And at the same time...
But so wait, because we went from 1996 to 2000,
oh, yeah.
So 4 years. So
in 1997 was the official opening of my company.
Okay. So 1 year coding a software that wasn't used. One more year with a good language.
Yeah.
So then finally you finished the software. So did you manage to sell it?
Yeah, we started to sell it in 1999.
Okay. And how did you get your first customers?
Well, it was tough, but mainly visiting them.
So, but
and direct mail.
Oh, so but so you took like the
yeah, okay. The yellow pages.
Yeah, the yellow pages, exactly. And you went to see them, or did you call them?
Well, both.
But are you a bond seller?
No, I wasn't.
So what did you do?
I hated that. I hate that part. But I had to visit them also, and also I knew that I had to, you know, go to the market and see what would be the objections, what would be the key points, because for sure one office was not enough to see the. You know, it was not enough to see the sample of the market, to see the trends, because when we start to sell, immediately we start to see features that they don't apply for the first one, but applies for the second one.
Right.
And most of these features that we start to see in the beginning are key features that would apply to everyone. So that's one of the things that were very, very important, to get this feedback of the client. But I must mention that when you open the company also, there was an important and a key moment, which was choosing the name of the company.
And
I spent a lot of time trying to come up with the name of the company.
You're not the only one.
Yeah.
It's a big problem for a lot of entrepreneurs.
It is, it is, it is. Because it's the branding, and you want something. And I didn't know much about marketing. I had a couple books that I was reading, because my first master enjoyed a lot of about marketing. I still have the books that he gave me to study marketing. And I knew that I had to have a name that could catch and have the attention. So I come up with the Kamae. Kamae is a Japanese word connected with the martial arts to mean to be aware and to be in the stand position. And so I came up with
it's
this.
It's not Kiai, yeah? It's Kamae, yeah, and we'll go to the Kiai next.
Yeah, we'll go there. We'll go there. We'll go there.
After.
So, but that was a key moment, because even today, after 21 years, the name is still good in terms of, you know, getting attention and all. Of course, it has some issues also, because sometimes we write with K and they write with C sometimes. So
right,
yeah, nothing is perfect.
So you get your first customers.
Yeah.
So you can pay your first employees with a percentage.
Yeah.
And everyone is happy.
Well, try to be.
Okay.
Because it's not a lot of revenue, but we are starting.
But you can make a living from it or not?
Yeah.
From the first year?
Yes.
Awesome.
Well, first year, no. We are in the third year, 1999.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We are in the third year of the company when we released the software.
And you were still living with your parents?
Good question. Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So, and how old were you in 1999?
I was
25, 26.
So what year are we? 18. So 19. So 20. So yeah, 25.
Yeah,
24, 25.
Okay.
Around that, yeah. So
25. So, I mean, it's a good age. And
it is.
Living with your parents was a smart choice.
Yeah.
You're the embodiment of the startup.
Yeah.
You didn't start in your garage, but... Well, more or less, yes.
It wasn't garage, but it was the, how do you know, the balcony?
Yeah, right.
The balcony in my...
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it was in the balcony. So.
Okay, so you begin to sell copies in Portugal.
Yes.
And then you apply for the Microsoft competition.
Yes,
and you
won.
Win. So how many competitors did you have?
Well, a lot. I don't know the exact number, but I remember it was hundreds.
Did you do something special to win that?
No.
No, not, just your software was
It was a complete surprise, because we totally forgot. And suddenly I received a letter a few months after. I received a letter saying, hey, you won this. And I was like, cool. And then there was a check also.
Oh.
Yeah, because it was a prize money. So not much, but it was a prize money. So I was like, oh, cool.
So did you do to an award ceremony? Or?
Yeah, we had an award ceremony. We still have the picture and all that stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So did it help you to put you on the map or
of
not?
Of course. Yeah, it helped. But it was not the... There was another thing that helped us to put in the map.
What?
Which was because softwares, we were not selling a lot, because we have to put this in perspective. Lawyers didn't have computers at that time.
Hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
So
crazy
I was.
When you think about it.
Yes. Yeah. So they were still having typing machines.
In 2000?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Some type machines. Some they had computers, but they only used like word processor, and to have a system that would manage it was something beyond their dreams.
Hmm.
Okay. So it was a hard sell.
Because they had to buy a computer.
Yes.
For everyone.
Yes, yes. So it was really weird because usually they had a computer or a type machine for the secretary. That would, you know, they would write in on paper the contracts and she would type them. Okay. So it was not, it was a hard sell. But I knew it was it was coming. And in 2000, the government sent a law saying that, okay, because the internet was already in, and they release a law saying that, okay, you have to apply to the court in an electronic way. And so that helped to, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes, that helped a lot.
So the government helped?
Yes. But that was not the key point. The key point was in more or less in 2000 also, I met through a friend, I met a guy called Luis Matos, and he's one of the best magicians in the world. And so it happened by chance. I was like side by side in the same table, and we were talking, and we were doing some websites for people. We were, you know, I had a friend that was working with me, and we were doing some websites. And so I said to this guy, "Oh, why don't we do your website for free, and in return we can use your image and you can use your name to publicize?" And he's a really big name in Portugal. Now in the world, he's a big name, you know. His name is like David Copperfield, the same thing. So he said yes. He said, okay, let's do. So we did that. And a months later, we had also, it's funny how these things disappear, but they were very good at that time. We had Oscars also for the internet.
Okay.
Kind of Oscars, like the best blogger, the best website in the, and so we were elected the best website in the entertainment field.
Entertainment?
Yes, because he's a magician.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So the web, and I remember that we were developing the website, and there was a time frame for applying to this competition. And we were developing until like 7 a.m., you know, developing like tricks on the web using the technology at that time. And so it was very interactive, the website. So we won that. So we started to use his name also as a client reference. For a small company like we, it was awesome. It was really awesome.
So it's interesting how you build like slowly your fame, your reputation in Portugal using awards and also interesting customers. And so this customer, he didn't pay, right?
It's like he didn't pay.
So you have this habit of working for free in exchange for experience and also testimonials. And these, I mean, my dear Rebels Intelligents, it's something you can do too. Just try to work for free. Of course, it's not the goal of your life,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
But just to get experience and testimonials, and it will help to start the machine.
No, especially if the testimonial is something very with a big authority. Because the idea here now he's my friend, but the idea with him was like he was a big authority. You know, people would look to him like a reference. And he's still a reference. And so that build immediately, it transferred authority also for us. So it was a good thing. So my idea was, okay, let's build the business in different areas so we can have, first, revenue to survive. And second, we don't know where the trends goes, because we knew that the lawyers would start slowly because of the, you know, the market, so they get used to it. And so the internet was blowing, and so the websites. And at the same time, we got a small investment. This was in like 2001. We got a small investment from someone that I knew in karate in the United States that invested to build a software for billing for entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And that was another key moment because we developed the software. In 2002, it was faster. In 2002, we released the software. And we didn't have the money for the marketing. So I said, okay, how can I put the software in front of everyone with almost zero money? And how can I do this launch in a very, very effective way where I don't have to manage with logistics? I don't have to manage with the invoicing. I only have to manage with the maintenance or technical support of the software. That was the question that was in my head. And I want to reach as much possible, as much people as possible. So I was one day walking in the street of Lisbon, and I realized that there were a lot of what are called kiosks.
Kiosks.
Yeah. And so there's a place where they sell newspapers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was watching it, and there is everywhere. I was like, everywhere. So I realized.
I think it's a bit less everywhere now, but
yeah, it's true.
It was at the time. Yeah,
at
yeah.
that time, they had.
They had a massive. It was a massive
was
distribution.
Massive,
network.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were. They had like 15,000 spots. So I got a contract. So I contacted. There were like two or three distribution companies. So I contacted one of them, and I managed to have a contract of distribution to those spots. Mm-hmm. And for me to produce 15,000 CDs or 30,000, because I want to put two CDs in every spot.
That's a lot.
30,000? No, it was not a lot, because if you make the math, 30,000 times maybe like €1, maybe less. It was less, the production of the CD. It was a CD and a placard. So I got with less than €25,000 a visibility, a national visibility.
And did it help?
We did 1 million.
1 million of sales.
So
wow.
So
it's crazy.
It was amazing.
So, but okay, the software was for who?
For entrepreneurs.
But
small business owners.
So it was to do billing.
Do billing, inventory.
So it was like a magazine with two CDs?
Well, it was like a board. We had a board because I knew that I had to show the CDs, and they had to be big, because when we are in the competing with the newspapers, you put the newspaper like this, and you know the newspapers are not seen. So I want to put something big with the CD. So the big was only
that's
like
smart.
The marketing,
you're
you know,
thinking of the box. Yeah.
Yeah. So what they do, they would put like behind, because also the price that we put is less than. So 25 euros. It was around €30. Mm-hmm. €30, which is very cheap for a software at the time.
But was the support included or not?
Yes, for 60 days.
Okay. So you got a lot of emails.
Yeah. Well, not much, but we had a lot of also phone calls.
What is the software where you had the photo of the dog?
Yeah, it was that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about the dog. Why you did that? Because it's very interesting.
Because the thing is, I want to put this software as, you know, as do a big launch with this, and also in terms of marketing, again, I was trying to set up an image that could give credibility. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I had a German Shepherd, and so I realized. I mean, one day I was with him, and I realized, okay, what if I put the name of our softwares are always with the prefix of the name of the company, so it's always Camai. Gest is management in Portuguese. So Camai Gest or Camai Law of Law, or Camai Bank, which was a software for banks. Anyway, so what if we put Camai Gest, the best friend of your business?
That's awesome. With a photo of you on the door.
Yes, with
that's
a photo
good.
Of me. So that was a way
That's a good marketing trick. I mean,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And you came up with the idea.
Yes, I
awesome.
Came up with the idea. I had a friend, again, in the martial arts world. I had a friend that was a photographer.
So as you can see, the story of Ricardo is like, I had a friend and something amazing happened. So
no,
it helps also, I mean,
oh,
just
yeah.
as a side note to be like, to have friends and
yes,
to
it's,
talk
it's,
with them. And
it's very
it
important.
Gives you ideas,
yes,
creativity.
It's very important. Because to be alone is, you know,
yeah. So
nobody wins alone.
So you got the idea of putting the dog, and it also helped.
It helped a lot for the sales.
And you made 1 million euros of sales.
Yes.
Okay.
Because people connect.
So basically, every company in Portugal bought your software.
No, but because a lot of people bought only for curiosity. Also.
Mm. Oh, really? 30 euros was like.
And the thing is, I knew because I read in some books. I knew that I need to have 7 to 9 touching points so the person buys by impulse. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is to go through a kiosk and they go like, okay, I see this. I put in the subconscious and then they buy. And that really happened. That really happened.
But is it when also you had this big problem with the distributor?
Yes, that's the second phase.
Okay, so tell us about this story, because it's amazing. And it's a good example of a roller coaster in the entrepreneur's life.
Oh, yes. So I do this launch. The launch is amazing. It's like we are selling like crazy. But I did a beginner's mistake. I put all the eggs in the same basket. So what happened was, they got the money, but they were in...
Who got the money?
The distribution company.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were on the verge of bankruptcy. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So they went bankrupt and I didn't receive the money.
My goodness.
Yes. So that was really, really tough.
It's bad because you had to pay for the CDs.
Oh, yes.
You had to do the support for 60 days.
Yes.
You knew you had 1 million waiting for you and you couldn't get it.
Yes.
My God.
It was...
Second stage of your life where it's like, I'm sure it was like a mess.
No, it was. It was because at that time we had 12 people in the company. Uh-huh. Because we grew up very fast in terms of developers that we needed and also the technical support, because we knew that we would have a lot of people. So I did this bet like, 60 days or 90 days before selling, because we knew that we were going to ramp up with this, because I was sure that was the technique that was going to win.
It was true.
And it was true, but...
There was something bad in the system. That, yeah. So what did you do?
So what I did is, first of all, when this happened, I could go bankrupt because I didn't have the money to sustain myself. Mm-hmm. I was betting a lot. And the other, doing the website and selling the software for lawyers wasn't enough to all the rest of the team. And so I had to make some difficult calls, because we had to survive. Mm-hmm. And so the two options were going bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was a smart choice, because I would not blacklist it. But I have one thing from martial arts that is sometimes is terrible, which is honor. Mm. Honor is one of my biggest values. And so to have that, kind of failure, and there is a lot of, Elon Musk and a lot of people that have already have a bankrupt in companies, and they just bounce back in a very successful way. But I didn't want that in my record. I didn't want it in my record. And at the same time, I had like 10 people, 10 to 12 people around me that I didn't want to let them down, like saying, okay, we are closing the door, so, go away, thank you very much. I didn't want to do that. And so, and the other option was, okay, trying to come up with an idea to survive. And so what happened was, first, I was doing some things with the banks trying to survive. And I had my bank accounts negative. And my parents were very, very helpful. And they mortgaged their house.
You were still living with your parents at the time?
Yes.
Wow. You stayed a long time.
It was the last year that I was with
them. It was 2002, right?
Yes, because I was dating already with my wife.
And you were 27 or 8?
Yeah, it was more or less
that. Wow.
Yeah,
man. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, and
they mortgage their house. Wow.
Yeah, they mortgage their house.
It's scary. Then you took a lot of risk.
Yes.
But you knew that also that the business model was right, because...
Yes, but that was really, really tough. That decision almost broke my heart. It was tough. And at that year that they did this, I stopped teaching martial arts, because I needed my totally focus on the business. So that was the year that I stopped the dojos. I put the dojos to some of the students, and I totally focused on the company. So yeah, that was really, really important to do that. Mm.
So did you still have access to the kiosks through another distribution company?
Yeah, so that's what I did.
So you tried to do, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I tried to apply the same thing. Of course, it would be difficult, because in the first, there was a new... So even though we could manage to have some results, and during almost 1 year, I think we did like 500,000. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. You start to recover.
Just for to be clear about that, you never got the 1 million back, right?
No.
Never.
Never.
Did you try it on court and the point is bankrupt? It's bankrupt.
Yeah.
The companies like yours are on the bottom.
Yes, my debt was like the least because they were like a big group. Yeah. So
first they paid the state then and the banks. Bank employees. Yes.
So and it was
all
like,
the providers are like yeah.
I think when they do the split. It would give us like 15 euros or something. So I'm not going to spend money and time of the lawyers and all that stuff. Anyway, so that was tough. But during the time from that bankruptcy to get the new contract, it took us like 8 months. Mm. Because the contracts with these kind of companies that have distribution
company.
It takes a lot of time.
At this time, maybe you were more cautious about their financial health?
Yes. And trying to find information, something that I didn't do, calling the banks, trying to get some information, all that stuff.
Can you do that?
What we call the due diligence.
The banks, they cannot give you...
But they do.
You had some...
They do.
Influence. Okay.
Give me the name, give me the information. So we apply the force. So, yeah, that's what we call due diligence. That's what we call due diligence. Everyone
should do that.
Smart enough should do that. So, I start to have a negotiation with this company. But during those times, 8-9 months, and well, probably it took us 1 year to put the software again on the market, we had to survive. So I had to make a very difficult call. So, as you know, the VAT at that time, I think it was like 19% or 70%. Now it's 23% in our country. But at that time, it was like 17 or 18. And plus some other taxes. So I had to make a difficult call. I would pay the state, the government, or I would pay my employees.
Oh, so you paid your employees, but the state was not happy.
Yes.
Right.
So I did that call. So during the next like 3 or 4 years, because I was trying to recover, and when you have like a big debt in before, you try to recover and you try to pay, but you try to receive, but what you receive is not enough to pay immediately everything. So you have this always this even though you are trying to put lower, you have this battle in terms of cash flow, in terms of everything, because I then realized that I could sell, when I have the distribution, the other company, I could sell not only the software, but I could sell courses. And I started to sell courses. So before selling courses online, I sold courses offline in a CD. Mm. And I realized that people were buying. And so with those courses, in 2 years, we did 1.5 million, which was really, really amazing.
So you made really like good money.
Yeah, that time, but...
And you could pay those estates, so...
Yeah, well, no, not yet. So I could pay a little bit, but not what was behind.
So, but did you negotiate with them so you could have a payment plan?
So the plan was, because the government was not like... they didn't have the process and the workflow in places, they would take time. And so I was like, okay, let's use that time when they will send me a letter or something like that. We'll handle it. So I usually say that one battle at a time. We cannot win the war with just one battle. This go for. And so what happened was from 2003 to 2006, we had this battle. And in 2006, they came for me, of course, saying, okay, hey, you need to pay. Yeah. Plus 40%. Plus,
40.
Yes. Plus this, plus this, plus this. I was like,
so did you try to use the force again?
Yeah, but this was a tough call again. So this was the second time in my life that I was like on the verge again for the bankruptcy. Because we were paying, but we couldn't pay the rest. So we're like, oh, shit. So we had this also in front. But then something happened. And when we try to focus on solutions instead of the problems, there is always something happening. Mm. And what happened was we received an email from Angola.
Angola,
yes.
Because Angola is also...
It speaks Portuguese.
Yes.
Yeah, and I received an email of a company, and I had, at that time, a uncle working in Angola. He was a missionary. And I sent an email to him saying, hey, do you know this company? And he replies to me back, saying, that's not the company. That's the company in Angola. So we start to negotiate with them.
What did they ask you? Hmm? What did they ask you?
They asked me information about the legal software.
Oh, okay.
The legal one. So because they have a department, at that time they said like 3 licenses. I was like, 3 licenses? Come on. Okay. But then I realized it was like 120 licenses. And in Angola, at that time, it was 10 times the price, the usual price. So we would like times 10. So if something would cost like 1,000 euros, it was 100 there. Because there was also some risk. You know, Angola was, it had get out of a war. And there was some risk, some security risks. So we start to with this company, and we start to negotiate, and we got a huge contract. I cannot say the value, but we got a huge contract that helped us to get over this challenge.
So you managed to pay the government?
Yeah.
Did you have to pay 40%?
No, we had to pay that 40%.
Oh my
but
God.
We managed to pay like. In agreement.
With a payment plan.
Yeah, with a payment plan. So because I didn't want to, pay everything, and now I'm zero again.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
And I have to deliver the software, and I have to travel to Angola, and I have to, because we always need money to...
Right, to run the company.
Exactly. So, but it was, and then I realized, if I sell to Angola, I can sell to other countries. Because sometimes we are so into our business.
Right.
That we lose completely. We are like this, you know.
So you realize you could first like sell in Portuguese-speaking countries,
yeah,
but also other languages, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I started. Maybe the this legal stuff, this legal solution that we developed, maybe it applies to other countries. So I start to go. I start to go to conference in other countries, and I start to deal with lawyers in other countries, and I start to realize, shit, this is. Equal everyone, the same pains, same objections, same needs. So I start to realize, I think we can sell in other countries. Of course, we went from countries that were first with the same language, or very similar.
So Mozambique.
Yeah, Mozambique, Cape Verde, Brazil. Then we start also with Spain. And suddenly we had also a Portuguese guy that bought us the software, and he was from Macau,
where we are right now.
Exactly.
Ah, okay. Because Macau was a Portuguese colony, city for 500 years.
Yes, yes. It was given by the Chinese because Portuguese helped to
the emperor.
It helped deal them with pirates.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then Portugal gave it back to China in 1999.
Yeah, exactly. And so, there was a lawyer also from my town that knew a little bit of me, but he saw the internet and all that stuff, and they bought the software. And so, but I didn't come to Macau for 2 years after they buy. Because I was totally focused on those countries in Africa. And Africa was booming, We could sell, we could sell something that costs $5,000 or 5,000 euros in Portugal. It would cost like 50,000 there. So it was a great, great opportunity. And I was traveling there a lot. I was traveling there. But anyway, then we came here, and then we start to translate our software into Chinese. We already have the software in English, and we start to sell here in Macau, and then,
And then it went great.
Yeah.
And now you have a successful software company.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have how many employees in Portugal?
Well, we are 20 now.
20, wow. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I had
and a... We expect, because for a long time, and this is very important, for a long time, I decided not to grow my company. So I would, if I had something that, imagine that I had a software project, and the software project would involve to get more 3 or 4 developers. I would subcontract. I would subcontract them, especially through Odesk at that time. Okay, subcontract them. They would work. We would do the job, and that's it. And that also was some important that I realized, and which is. Most of the software companies, they start to develop services. you know, building customized software for other companies. But I realized that those projects always, they don't end on time. They always, you know, overpass the budget. So I realized I need a product. I need a product. I need to develop something that I could sell. If I sell one or if I sell 1,000, it's almost the same cost for me. And so so I was always looking for that, always looking for that. Even when sometimes would show up, you know, a big project to develop from zero, I would be careful. Because we had like a couple softwares that we developed from zero. But it was a pain in the ass because, you know, there was some, sometimes there were some disagreements with the client, even though we had everything on writing. But it was, even in emotion, in terms of management, our emotions were, it was difficult. So I thought, okay, product. I want a product to sell. And so I made a decision that I didn't want to grow the company in terms of organically for a long time. I said, okay, I don't want, because I want to deal, I have to deal with employees, I have to deal with, you know, the cash every month. I had already passed for two key moments, like I told you, two key moments that I didn't like at all. So I didn't want to grow. But until a certain point, like 2 years ago, more or less, one of our friends, Jason Friedman, that that I don't know, you already interview him, so I don't know if he's already online or not.
I think it will be online when this video will be public. Yes.
Okay, so and I was talking with Jason, and Jason grew his company from zero to $150 million, and I asked him what was the one thing that made the total difference of growing the company, and he said one particular thing, which was decision. We decided to grow. And that was almost like a haha moment, because I knew by myself that I didn't want to grow, and I was like debating myself, should I grow or should not grow, and that was hurting my company. So I gather my core team. I have like four people that deals with the, you know, sales, financial, that stuff, and I said to them, okay, we are going to grow. So we have a plan for this next like 12 to 8 months to double the team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Because we have a couple of projects going on.
Yeah, you have this big project of launching your software in the cloud.
Yes.
In how many languages?
In 8.
8 languages. Woo. Using the product launch formula.
Yes, using PLF.
Which will be like new for you. And also, that's also interesting, is you started a side business where you sell information courses. So new best-selling product so far in this field is a product about how to be unstoppable, right? Like where you take like what you learn to become a worldwide champion, to
an entrepreneur,
to like train people to be like, to have more energy, to be more motivated,
to break through.
So and they have a wall that
Not only breakthrough, but breakthrough and build a network around that.
Oh yeah, this guy is so good to connect with people. But you hear this story, right? It's like you heard. It's like, yeah, I had this friend. He's making friends all the time. So
because it's really important. People don't think, okay, I was not world champion alone. Yes, I was the guy that was fighting in the middle, but that was the result of a lot of people that helped me. So it's really important. And so like 2 years ago, I was like, I wanted to do something that could help people, because I saw, and also this was related to a big depression that Portugal had. Mm-hmm. Portugal had a depression, which...
A crisis, you mean? Crisis?
Yes, like and it was bailout. You know, we had, they have to borrow money to Portugal to survive. And
to loan money,
exactly.
Portugal would not bankrupt.
Yeah, exactly. So I saw people totally depressed, and they would not, you know, they were too focused in their own issues and their own challenge. And I thought to myself, and also I went to Brazil and I saw the same thing. So I thought to myself, I think I could help. You know, I could help some people at least. And also the entrepreneurs, because I saw the entrepreneurs also totally not smiling and very difficult. And after passing by two moments that were very hard for me and I could manage, I said, okay,
I think I have the experience also to help that, because the day before, in 2002, the day before I decided not to bankrupt, everyone around me
said, "Do it," and maybe it was the most logical option. But
yeah, it was a logical option.
And sometimes you have to make this kind of call. Yeah. And
sometimes you have to go through intuition, even if it doesn't make sense. You know.
Right.
Sometimes, but the thing is, so what I was talking about?
I think the fourth time you asked me that in this interview.
Yeah.
So as you
I'm
can
a
see,
bit tired.
Ricardo is really successful, but you know, he's a bit, you know. So.
So anyway, I was talking about the 2 years before I saw this depression. I said, okay, I can do I think I can make a program where I will teach people how to be unstoppable.
So you had this idea,
yes.
And that's when you started to learn about the product launch formula,
yes.
And this kind,
yes,
of stuff.
So I can help on that, and use all the knowledge in terms of martial arts, apply in the Western world and in a different way. And so I came up with this program that I start to sell. And at the same time, because it was an inner conflict, is how do I position this inside the company?
Mm.
It's always a battle, but I realized that this was an amazing personal brand. Amazing. And it's called the Unstoppable Kiai. So that's why. So
finally.
Okay.
So before we finish the interview, can you share with us what is your next big project?
Yeah. So our biggest project that we have been developed for the last 7 years. So there is one thing sometimes is very important is to have patience and to believe in the product or to believe in the project in that case. And so we have developed for the last 7 years software as a service. Mm-hmm. Because also we've been testing and doing some research in the market. And we knew that if we were like 3 years before, and this, because this project is applied to lawyers. So like 3 or 4 years ago, if we would talk about cloud to lawyers, they would say, well, no way. I will not put my thing in the clouds. But the things have been totally transforming. And now it's really a key moment to launch a kind of solution like this. So we are going to launch a software as a service in 8 languages for law firms up to 20 people. And it's going to be one of probably the biggest launch ever that we are going to do until now.
And this time we don't have a distributor in the middle to take all your money.
No, this time, even though the gateway payments will be different. So we'll learn. And yeah, we're going to a PLF style, and we expect to break some records in our groups.
Awesome. Cool. And also you plan to launch more like online courses.
Oh, yes.
For your personal brand, like Unstoppable.
Yes,
Kiai.
Yes. Because it's more almost like a snowball.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing that for every launch, we are double or quadruple. The last launch, we quadruple. And so we are seeing that there is we are tuning every time our avatar. And so the things are getting well and getting good. And the impact also in people are amazing. We have amazing case studies. And so one of the ideas is also to go to the English market still this year, like in the end of the year. So
awesome.
That's
okay.
Going to be our project.
So to finish the interview, because, you know, it was very long. So people who are still watching, they are super motivated. They are like crazy. They're on fire.
Okay.
So imagine like someone is still watching now. I think there are some people. And
still there? Are you still there?
If you're there, put in the comments something a bit funny like...
Okay. Like Kiai.
No, wait. Like put in the comments that you like Ricardo's hairs.
Oh!
So we know you watch until the end. It's awesome, right?
Yeah, okay.
And in French, just say, j'aime les cheveux de Ricardo. J'aime la coupe de cheveux de Ricardo. That's very good. Okay. So, to these people that I was watching, and that they are like, oh yeah, it seems amazing. I want to be an entrepreneur also. What would be your advice for people who are worth starting or who wants to start?
Well, first is just do it, man. Just do it. Because sometimes people take too much time in planning. Mm-hmm. Planning. They don't do it. And it's important to do because sometimes
a lot of things that we say, even we with our experience, sometimes we say like it's this way and it's the other way. So you have to test, you have to do it, test, learn from that. And so I would say like just do it. But if you are if you have some issues with your values, like if security is very important for you, okay, stay with your job for a certain period, get some, you know, some cash flow, some reserves, and at the same time work the rest of the hours. And then you just go. You just go for it. So just do it.
Just do it. Okay, thank you, man. It was awesome.
Merci d'avoir écouté ce podcast. Si vous l'avez aimé, est-ce que je peux vous demander une petite faveur? Laissez un commentaire sur iTunes pour dire ce que vous appréciez dans le podcast, tout simplement. Ça aidera d'autres rebelles intelligents comme vous à trouver le podcast et puis à être inspirés tous les jours ou presque par lui. Merci et à très vite pour de nouvelles aventures.